Okay. John chapter 6. We have been looking at Jesus, and we're studying the Jesus touch as Jesus interacts with different people. How is he going about that? What can we learn from his interaction as he's dealing with different people in different situations and circumstances? You know, as we look at all these things, we started out, we were talking about the wedding feast at Cana, and Jesus' interaction with the folks there. Lessons that we can learn as Jesus is dealing with people in their circumstances and situations. We talked about Nicodemus, comparing Nicodemus and where he was and who he was to the woman of Samaria. Each of their unique situations and circumstances that they were in, how did Jesus deal with them? The last part of our study over the last several weeks, we've been looking at the healing at the pool, the man who was there lame, and Jesus' interaction in dealing with him, each one having its purpose of drawing people into some kind of a spiritual lesson, something to learn that would draw them closer to God. As we look at the story of Jesus feeding 5,000 people, we're looking at Jesus' interaction, and there are, and what I want to do with this is I want you to kind of think of this in terms of a drama that is unfolding. Okay? There are some different characters in this drama as it unfolds, and what I want to do is let's talk about each of the different characters and look at, and I want you to be thinking in terms of what is Jesus trying to do with each of these different characters. In other words, this isn't just a matter of one individual like some of the other stories we've been looking at, but this is, there are several people that are involved in this particular drama. And what we see is, as we look at the story, Jesus is interacting with each one, or his influence is there with each particular person involved in this. But again, just like all the other things that we've been looking at, each person or each character, if you will, has unique needs. Okay? So let's look at it that way, and let's see, how does Jesus work with each individual person and then the whole group collectively, so to speak? And again, the goal being to touch these people's lives in a way that draws them closer to God. Right? So let's talk about the scene, first of all. Let's paint the scene of our drama. John chapter 6. If you go just before the chapter opens, in chapter 5, what we find happening here is that Jesus is dealing with, you know, he's dealing with a hostile crowd, so to speak, okay? And, you know, the healing of the pool at the pool has taken place. Because of that, there are issues that some people have with Jesus, and in particular, some of the religious leaders who don't like what Jesus is doing. They don't like, you know, this new star that's come on the scene, so to speak. And they dislike him so much, they are wanting to kill him. Go back over to chapter 5 and verse 18. These religious leaders were looking at how they might kill Jesus. Okay? So we have this, at this particular part, as the scene begins to unfold with chapter 6, we have a hostile crowd that is so hostile, they want to get rid of Jesus. All right. So as chapter 6 begins to unfold here, Jesus leaves from that area. He goes to the other side of the lake, and the crowds of people are following him. Okay? Chapter 6 in verse 2 gives us a little bit of an indication as to why, at least in part, the crowds of people are chasing after Jesus. What does it say there? Yeah, they're looking at, they're watching what he's doing. They're seeing the result of the miracles. He's been, in particular, doesn't it say about healing the sick? Okay? So they're seeing the results of what Jesus is doing and what he's saying, and they want more of it. So they're chasing after Jesus. They're pursuing Jesus, okay? In verse, as Jesus comes back, the crowd reaches him. The scene unfolds that there's this crowd of folks that are gathered around Jesus. He's up on the mountainside there. And the scripture tells us in verse 10 that the men, he had the men sit down, it says, and the number of men was 5,000. Okay, now, I don't know that number is intended to be a literal that somebody went through. You know, John actually went through the crowd and said, "Okay, you know, let's." So there might have been 5,001. There might have been 4,999. I don't think the number itself specifically is a real issue, because one thing, and scholars debate and discuss this. You know, does the word "men" is that a generic term for people? Or is that just referring to, which oftentimes in these writings, that's exactly where they only counted the men. Okay? So if you look at it that way, if you include women and children that most likely were there, then the number in the crowd then swells from 5,000, just counting the men, to possibly somewhere around 15 or more thousand people there. Okay? Don't know. We know at least that there were, how many there? 5,000, okay? At least 5,000. That's a lot of folks. Okay? That's a lot of folks. Just if you just say that's all that was there was 5,000. Again, I don't think the number is really the main issue in all of this. Okay? If there were 20,000, it would have all been fed. The same way. Okay? One of the important lessons from this is, in John, in Merle Tenney's book, The Gospel of John, it's a commentary on there, he divides the ministry of Jesus up into several different periods and different events. And the miracles, he looks at each of these different miracles that John records, and he talks about each particular miracle in terms of what it was accomplishing. And for this particular miracle, Merle Tenney labels this as a miracle that focuses on Jesus' power over quantity. Okay? Paul tells us that we have a God who can do how much?
All.
Immeasurably more than all we can ask or imagine, right? So we're talking about, and one of the important lessons from this story is, I think, that Jesus' power over quantity. Is there a limit to how much God can do? You see? So in that regard, you see, it doesn't really matter whether there were 5,000 or whether there were 15 or 20,000. You see? God's power over quantity is limitless. Everybody understand that? Everybody agree? Okay. So there were at least 5,000 people there. And Jesus is going to demonstrate with his touch, Jesus is going to demonstrate the unique role that different ones are playing in this drama as it unfolds. And that's what we want to look at, is the unique role of the different folks in this. So let's start talking about the different characters, so to speak. As again, for those of you who came in after, we're talking about this, looking at this event in a sense of a drama that is unfolding. Okay, and let's talk about the different characters that are here. The first one, the main character in this story, in this drama as it unfolds, is who? It's Jesus. Okay, it focuses around him. He is the focus of the attention of the people. Is he not? Again, they're chasing after him. Okay, they like what they've heard. They like what they see. The religious leaders, not as much. But the masses of people are pursuing Jesus because they like what they're seeing and hearing from him. Okay? So the focus of attention by the people is on Jesus. All right? But what we see happening here is that Jesus shifts the attention off of himself and onto other people in this drama or this scene as it unfolds. The second character that we see in this, main character in this, is Philip. And what we see is Jesus shifting the attention and the focus of the people off of himself over to Philip. Excuse me, look at verse 6. Somebody read verse 6 for us, please. I'm sorry, read verse 5 and 6. Yeah, 5 and 6.
Then Jesus lifted up his eyes and seeing a great multitude, and to him he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread that these many eat?" But this he said to test him, for he himself knew what he would do.
Okay, so the scene as it begins to unfold, you've got this massive crowd that's just spread out all over the place, right? And Jesus, noticing this huge crowd of people there, he's already got a solution in his mind, doesn't he? He knows how this is all going to play out. But Philip enters into the scene at Jesus' questioning of him. And John tells us this was a test. What kind of a test do you suppose this is? What's the test really all about? What? Okay. Meaning what? Okay. All right. Do you trust that what you've seen so far, that this is something that I can handle? West?
I think that was the test of what do you do in a hopeless situation?
Okay. All right.
Just put us out there. It's impossible.
Right. Okay. Which brings us to, let's talk about Philip specifically, okay? This second character, so to speak, in this drama. We see Jesus' interaction with him, and what does Philip's response to Jesus, what does it really indicate about Philip himself? What kind of a person do you think Philip must have been or might have been based on his response?
Money conscious person.
Okay, all right. Money conscious. And what else? Materialistic, perhaps. As some would say, and Brother Anderson, I like the way the label that he puts him on, he calls him a bean counter. I think we're all pretty familiar with that term, right? The bean counters are the guys who sit up in the main office and they're, checking all the figures and make sure all the columns are lined up and, so that at the end of the day, everything adds up, right? And so you think about Philip kind of in this position, he's a bean counter. Jesus says, we need to get some food to feed all these people. Well, immediately, what's the bean counter start doing? Yeah, how much are we going to need to do all of this? Let me see, how many people we got? Let's see, we kind of square up this amount. We got this much in this crowd. You multiply that by. We got over 5,000 people here, Jesus. 8 months' wages would not be enough for everyone to have a bite, let alone to feed them, to satisfy. We're talking about, Jesus says what? He says we need to feed these people. Philip, his response is, feed them? Are you kidding me? We can't even give them a taste. you see? I mean, the best we might be able to do is satisfy them with a sniff, okay? Just pass it around, let everybody sniff a little bit. But feed them, that's not going to happen. Wes, I think that you're right. You know, what we see Philip doing is he's looking at what's his perspective? The impossibilities, isn't it? Okay? In other words, all of the reasons why this isn't going to happen. This is hopeless, a hopeless situation that Jesus has just presented. Feed all these people. Okay? Yeah, where can we buy it? Right. 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 But again, it's the issue of how are we going to feed these folks? Right?
But then I think he's getting back to Philip's personality. For sure, they didn't have 3 months' wages of money in their purse.
8 months' wages.
8 months' wages.
Yeah.
And so he would say, he said, let's go buy it. Show him the impossibility of it anyway.
Yeah.
And if I had 200 denarii, you know, we would have enough.
That's not going to be enough to feed for everybody to get a bite. Right.
But Philip had seen him the miracle more. And surely he also felt that he answered the question, but he knew that then Jesus could provide that because he's been provided that.
Perhaps so. I don't think that Philip's response is necessarily indicating, you know, this is not going to happen at all. I think Philip, that bean counter, is presenting things back to Jesus from a practical standpoint. Okay? Here's the practicality of this, Jesus. You want to buy bread to feed all these folks. We don't have enough money to do it. Okay? And now, I don't know what you got in mind, but when it comes terms of money, we don't have enough to do this. Because it would take a whole lot more than what we have in our purse. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And isn't that part of the Jesus touch? You see, to take something that, again, seems impossible, that it's going to require God's power to overcome. You see? Anybody can do the ordinary. But Jesus is getting ready to do the extraordinary. Something that no one else can do. If you had the money, the 8 months' wages, okay, then, go buy the food, but then isn't there also a possibility that is there enough food in this little town where they're right outside of that would be available to feed all of these people? You know, the merchants would be glad, you know, they're going, wow, look at this crowd, a couple of buses just rolled in, you know, when you're selling food, that's what you really like, you know, it's like, wow, buses just rolled in, look at all the money we're going to make. There probably wouldn't have been enough food in the town, you know, of all the bakeries or whoever was there to provide bread for that many people. So that adds to, in a sense, the impossibility, doesn't it? Okay? So what Jesus is doing, I think, in presenting this situation to Philip. I mean, I think Philip and the other disciples are probably just fine with, you know, okay, we got this large crowd of people, great audience. Jesus, go ahead and start preaching. You see? He'd have been happy with that. But then Jesus has to kind of throw a wrench into the works by saying, before we get started on the lesson, we need to feed all these folks. Yeah? You notice that the Jesus touch involves so often situations and circumstances that leave no doubt as to what is actually going to take place. Okay? For the few people that were privy to the miracle, the wedding feast at Cana, okay, was a situation where they were completely out of wine, remember? Okay? And for those servants who Jesus instructed, fill these jars with water, they knew that that's all that went into those jars was water. Okay? And so, how do you take plain water and turn it into not just wine, but the best wine? You see? The man at the pool. Was there any doubt in anybody's mind that was there in that at that particular time that this man was lame? Say, as we talked about that, it's a seemingly impossible situation, isn't it? You say that you're going to take a man who's been lame for all this time, and now he's going to get up and walk. There's no question about what had occurred. And in this particular incident, what we're seeing is the same kind of impossibility presented. The Jesus touch takes something that, on its face value, and from a human perspective, it's impossible. Okay? But as we said earlier, Jesus is about to demonstrate his power over quantity. It doesn't matter what the need is, and it doesn't matter how much you need. God has the ability and the capability to provide that. Oh yeah, I've often thought about that because they didn't have hearing aids back then and all that. They didn't have PA systems. You don't see Andrew or one of the other disciples, Nathaniel, carrying a karaoke box around with them. The portable with the microphones. I don't want any of that. It was. Huge crowd of people up there on the mountainside to be able to hear what Jesus had said. Okay. So, Philip, his response, his talent, rather, first of all, is counting the cost of things. Okay, Philip is a planner. All right, you present a problem. Okay, what are we going to do with this problem? How are we going to solve it? The counting starts going. Let's line everything up. Let's figure this out. My conclusion is, and my recommendation is, look, send them away to buy stuff because we don't have enough money to provide for all these people. Okay. Then Andrew comes in. He's the next character introduced in this drama. Okay? Lynn Anderson, by the way, he labels each of these different characters with a different title, so to speak, of concerning gifts. And for Philip, he says Philip, his gift is the treasury. Philip has treasury gifts, again, a bean counter. Okay, Andrew, the faithful one. What's his role in this drama?
I got something to start with.
Okay.
I got something you can build on.
Yeah. Here's a boy, and he's got this lunch. There's some loaves of bread and a couple of fish. But what's his question about? How does he present this to Jesus?
The boy's got two fish and bread, and there's something here.
Yeah, there's something here. I don't know how far it will go, but here's something.
Here's proof that there was more than 5,000 people there. He's got that last, because he says a man.
Yeah. There's a lot of folks. Okay. What is Philip demonstrating here? That Philip really is kind of lacking. Okay. Yeah. Philip seems to be looking at this situation instead of from the impossibility side to the possibility side, isn't he? We don't have a whole lot. There's, this little boy's got his lunch here. It's got five loaves of bread. And when you think about loaves, what are you thinking of?
Like
you know, Wonder Bread wrapped up in a package, you know, and it's all sliced. We got a loaf of bread, right? No. Most likely, these are more in the line of biscuits, okay? What we would call a biscuit, something that size. So, you know, a loaf to us is, you know, but the term is referring most likely to something that's very small. You're talking about a boy's lunch, okay? So how many loaves of bread is this boy going to eat with his lunch, okay? So most likely we're looking at like five biscuits and two fish. And some have said and suggested that the fish were probably like sardines. I'm not sure that they were quite that small, okay? But again, think about it in terms of whatever size these fish were, you're thinking about a boy's lunch, okay? So we're not talking about, you know, a giant, you know, bluefin tuna out here that he's dragging along with him and it's got plenty of meat on it for all kinds of folks. He's got a couple probably of small fish in there. I think doesn't the text even say small fish in there? You know, so whatever they were, think boy's lunch. Okay. But Philip presents this to Jesus from the perspective of, I don't know what this can do, but I do believe it can do something. So again, instead of the impossibilities, we don't have enough money to buy food for all these people, Andrew presents it from the standpoint of, we don't have much, but I've got faith that you can handle this. You can do something with this. Go back to when Jesus was first on the scene, and we see Philip and Andrew involved in the early choosing of the disciples, don't we? What's happening there? They're part of following John as his disciples, right? Okay. And what do we see Andrew doing when he's convinced that he's found the right guy? What does he do? Yeah. He goes to his brother Peter, you see, and tells him. It's the first thing he does. So we see Andrew as this guy that seems to have a personality that is very hopeful. You see? He's looking for possibilities. Here's this guy that's come on the scene, and he's, you know, saying some things. He's doing some things that are pretty amazing. Could this be the guy that we've been waiting for, the Messiah? You see, he has that built within him, apparently, this looking for the possibilities of what could be, rather than tending to look at the things that he doesn't think could really be. Okay? So two completely different perspectives at this point on Jesus. Would you agree? Right? Not sure how this little bit of food will help, but at least it's something. At least bring it to Jesus and let him decide what he can do. Chuck?
Ridiculous. So how would you approach Jesus? You would bring two little fish and a couple biscuits and find out who we are. Kind of awkward.
Yeah.
Here... Oh, I understand, but yeah. He's still approaching me.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, but doesn't that make say something really about him that he's going, yeah, this looks impossible, but let me present it to him anyway.
You look at the verb that it says, too little.
So again, we're looking at what are, you know, the whole scene as it's unfolding presents itself even more, Wes, doesn't it, as this impossibility. Okay? We've got this huge crowd of people. We don't have enough money. Even if all the food was available, we don't have enough money to buy it. Okay? So that's impossible. And now, okay, we've got a little bit of food here, but what's that among so many? David?
Mm-hmm. 1 out of 5,000 people. How does he do that?
a very sensitive nose. Smell the fish. No, but you're right. You know, it seems like that Andrew is a solutions guy. Even though he doesn't have the final solution, he's seeing the possibilities. I don't know how this will work, but I know something is possible. Okay. Another character that I think in studying this particular story so often gets kind of left out and pushed to the side is the small boy. Okay? He certainly plays a big role in this drama, does he not? You see? But again, so often we don't focus that. Well, yeah, he had some lunch and Jesus took it and, you know. Yeah. You stop and you think about it a minute. And Lynn Anderson says that he labels him as the one with the sharing gifts. Okay?
You know, a child is so different from an adult.
Yeah.
They're willing to give what little they have. And gladly, I mean, they say, hey, I can help you.
Yeah.
And I think that shows as a little child, would think as a little child, and do as a little child.
Absolutely. Unless you change and become like little children, you're not able to change. Okay. But here's this young boy who gave up his lunch, and again has this gift of sharing. He's willing to share what he has. It's not much, but he's willing to give it up for that. Willing to give his small lunch up so that others can benefit from that. But stop and think about it a minute. Did he really give up his lunch?
Or did Simon Peter rough him up?
Andrew presented. Andrew. Peter said, "Air boy, get over here. Give us your lunch here now." What I mean by that is, and do you see a valuable, important lesson in this? That I think goes along the same lines in principle of dying to self. Okay? What was he willing to do? He gave up his lunch. He was willing to let go of it so that others could be fed. Didn't he get fed along with all the rest of the people too? So he really didn't end up losing his lunch. You see? Not in that term. Okay? He didn't end up losing it. He got back plenty. Okay? But there was that willingness to die to self so that others could benefit. Okay? And that takes a certain attitude, doesn't it? A willingness to share, a gift of sharing. That little boy could have said, "Hey, you guys are on your own. You know, I got my lunch. I was smart enough to bring my lunch with me. I don't know where the rest of you are going to eat, but I got mine taken care of." Could have been his attitude. David presented the question here, you know, the issue of, you know, how did Andrew know that this boy, you know, even had this lunch? Well, it may very well have been that the boy heard the discussion between Jesus and Philip. And so he went to Andrew, who might have been standing there near him, and said, "I got my lunch right here." And so
I also believe that this man knew that he was blessed enough to have lunch every day.
Absolutely.
Every day. Yeah. So there, to have no lunch, you know, in a couple of days.
Yeah.
And he was willing to share.
Yeah. He had it.
He had.
And he's willing to share it with
and
others.
So there's the next day.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So we have this boy who has this gift of sharing with other people. Then we have the crowd. Okay? We've got this crowd of people who again, as we talked about earlier, are chasing after Jesus. They're pursuing him because of what they have already witnessed. Okay? They're interested in perhaps the healing miracles. By the indication of the text here, they saw the signs that he was doing on the sick, verse 2 there. So they're pursuing after Jesus, And what we find happening with this crowd of people as this drama unfolds to its conclusion, you know, Jesus takes the loaves and the fish. He prays over them. He tells the disciples to take these and start distributing them among the people. After he's had them all kind of sit down in groups of 50 and 100 and so forth, they're fed, okay? And not only does everybody have enough to eat, but what? They had not just some left over, but how much?
12
baskets full of food they had left over. What's that do to Philip's bean counter? They not only had not just a bite, but they had enough to be filled. And then they had leftover. Don't you just love the Jesus touch? You see? Jesus didn't just provide enough for everybody to have a bite, as Philip, you know, was kind of concerned about. He didn't even provide just enough that everybody could be fed. They had leftovers. Okay, now I don't know what your feeling about leftovers is, okay, but they had leftovers. I imagine that probably a lot of those folks in the crowd took some of that food home with them, okay? They were the first church gathering that gathered up the foam clamshell boxes and, you know, give me some of that so I can take it home with me for the next day. Jesus gave not only what they needed, but even more. What?
Yeah,
immeasurably more. Okay. And the crowd's response to Jesus, go over to verse 14. Okay? What is the crowd's response to Jesus?
This is truly the prophet.
Okay?
He's coming to the world.
Alright. And what else? They want to make him king. Even if by force. Okay? They're convinced this is the Messiah. Okay? It's time for us to make him king. And if he won't take it voluntarily, we'll make him take it. Okay? Now, when they're thinking in terms of making him king, what are they thinking of?
Earthly king.
Okay, he's the guy that's come to get rid of the Romans. That's what's on their mind, right? He's going to establish the kingdom. He's going to drive out the Romans. Of course, that's not in Jesus' plan, is it? Okay. Perhaps many of these same people are going to be, in about 3 years down the road, are going to be there in the city of Jerusalem screaming, "Crucify him. We have no king but Caesar." Here they want to make him king if they have to force him to do so. In that time, they will be screaming for his death. Okay. Are we out of time? Okay. Here's your homework assignment. We're going to stop here. Let me give you your homework assignment. I want you to read a couple of passages, and we're going to discuss the gifts that make things happen. Okay? We're going to look at three characteristics of biblical gifts. All right? From the idea of the gifts that different people in this story have. 1 Corinthians chapter 12. 7 through 11. Okay, I want you to read that section. Chapter 10, verse 24. Ephesians 4 and verse 12. And 1 Peter 4 and verse 10. Those particular verses, but read, you know, what's surrounding that so you get, you know, the picture of the whole situation. And next week we'll spend some time looking at those passages and talking about the use of these different gifts and so forth. All right? Thank you all very much.